All right, please turn to Revelation chapter 5. What I want to do is I want to do an initial reading of the chapter. All right, we're going to go verse by verse. I will occasionally stop you, all right, to write some questions on the board. Okay, and then we'll continue on and then we'll discuss them as we go through. Okay, and I do not have answers to a lot of these questions, maybe none of them, but I think they'll help us think through the material in the chapter and ask maybe some questions that we might not immediately ask when we read it. So let's start verse 1. Will you read the first verse? And when I say stop, stop, all right? Just one verse, yeah, we'll go around.
Then I saw on the right hand of him who was seated on the throne a scroll written within and on the back sealed with seven seals.
Okay, stop. Does anybody have a book? Instead of scroll there.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, question number one. What kind of book? Now, of the questions we're going to ask, this is probably actually the least important, but it's interesting. Go ahead.
Then I saw a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice, "Who is worthy to open the scroll and to loose its seals?"
And no one in heaven or on earth or under the earth was able to open the scroll or to look into it.
And I wept much because no man was found worthy to open and to read the book, neither to look thereon.
Okay, stop for a second. Why is John so sad? Okay. Chip.
Then one of the elders said to me, "Do not weep. See, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Lord David, has triumphed. He is able to open the scroll and seven seals."
Okay, stop for a second. Why can Jesus open it? All right? And if your answer is it's because he's God, you're lazy. All right? Come up with another answer. And that's always true. I don't think that's the right answer for this question here. All right? Frank?
And there between the throne and among the elders, I saw a lamb standing as though it had been slain with seven horns and with seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God who have been sent unto all the earth.
And he went and took the scroll from the right hand of him who was seated on the throne. And when he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, each holding a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. And they sang a new song, saying, "Worthy are you to take the scroll and to open its seals. For you were slain, and by your blood you ransomed people from God, from every tribe and language and people and nation.
And you have made them a kingdom and priests to our God, and they shall reign on the earth."
Then I looked and heard around the throne and the living creatures and the elders the voice of many angels numbering myriads of thousands of thousands.
And a loud voice there saying, "Worthy is the Lamb who is slain to receive power and wealth and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and praise."
And I heard every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and in the sea and all that is in them saying, "To him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb be blessing and honor and glory and might forever and ever."
And the four living creatures said, "Amen," and the elders fell down and worshipped.
Okay, two other questions. How was it sealed? All right. Actually, two questions related to the same one. How is it sealed / the manner? And I'll explain what this question is in a second. Manner of its opening. What I mean by this is, when it's sealed, were all seven seals open at one time, or was it progressive? Right? That's ultimately the question. All right. So let's start, now that we've read that. Actually, I want to read the first few verses of chapter 6 with that last question in mind. All right. Was this progressively breaking a seal and reading, or was it breaking all the seals, and now the whole thing can be read? You understand the difference? Okay. Chapter 6. Now I watched when the Lamb opened one of the seven seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures say, with a voice like thunder, "Come." And I looked, and behold, a white horse, and its rider had a bow, and a crown was given to it, and he came out conquering and to conquer. And when he opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature say, "Come." And out came another horse, bright red. Its rider was permitted to take peace from the earth, so that the people should slay one another, and he was given a great sword. All right, so we'll go over the contents of these seals in the future. All right, but try to picture in your mind what's going on here. When they open a seal, all right, when they open a seal, is John, when the angel says to John, "Come look," is John, they open a seal, and then he's like looking out there, and he's seeing something happening. Or is he opening a seal, showing a page, and saying, "Look at the page"? You see the difference? Is John visually watching something in a vision? Or is the angel opening, or is the person opening the seal, breaking the seal, turning to a page and saying, "Now look at that page"? And he sees a writer. Okay? Overall, not a huge question. Probably didn't determine major theological points. But try to think through what they're thinking through in terms of the scene. Now, we'll get to that more in a second. What kind of book is it? Now, the ESV has a scroll. Okay? King James has a book, right? When we think of book, like in English, we have a specific word for book versus scroll, right? If you say scroll, it's clearly not this form of a book, all right? Greek has some specific words too. The word that's used in this case is ambiguous, which is why it's different between the ESV and the KJV. Book simply means something written down. Okay? It is a writing of some sort. It could, in general, equally be a scroll, or it could be what is called the codex. Right? That's the form of this. All right? This is the codex. Now, we, by default, unless we see scroll, specifically in the text, if we see book, then we always default to this, because this is what we're used to, right? We don't read many scrolls. But by default, if the word is ambiguous at this time period, just statistically, this is way more likely, right? Why? Well, it was only in the first century that this form of the book started even becoming popular. And so later in the century, it became even more popular. But still, scrolls at this point in time would have been by far the most predominant. Yes, Chip?
There's another kind of scroll that one would might have. We rolled up like that, like that by itself, or around the dowel.
Right.
You had one with two dowels, and you kind of rolled one up while you unrolled the other.
Yeah.
To read it.
Totally. Now,
that might be a book.
That could be a book as well. You're absolutely right. Another argument why this is what you should have in mind, or maybe even that form, all right, is because the Jewish scriptures were always done on scrolls. Always done on scrolls. All right. So this was, if we're talking, because we are, if we're talking Jewish background here, all right, as we should, this would have been, if somebody's reading something in the synagogue and they're pulling something out, they're pulling out a scroll of some form. They are not pulling out a codex.
You write on both sides of a scroll?
You can write on both sides of the scroll. And you might, right? And that would mean there's writing on the inside and the outside. And you... I also think that might be a better argument for a scroll than a book, right? Of course, we have writing on the outside, but it's not the contents of the book, right? The contents of the book on the inside. For a scroll, you can have writings on both sides. That's very normal, all right? And it would be the contents. Now, something that some people have pointed out, I don't know if there's any significance to it. One other very important question, which I forgot to ask. What is in this book? Okay. What is in this book? The old covenant, when it was given on tablets of stone. All right? It says in the Pentateuch. Then when he wrote it, it was written on both sides. So some people have said this is the signification that this is supposed to be like the giving of the Torah. This is a new covenant scroll. Some people have said that. I don't know if we should take it there, but it's just some factoid to have in your mind. So in terms of what kind of book, think about this. All right? Don't think this, because this is unlikely. Now, let's talk about sealing. So what would that mean? For those of you who don't understand sealing, all right, here's the basic idea. I'll do green. If we think of the scroll being sealed, and if we think of you can only read it after you've broken all seven seals, it's like this. All right? There's a seal here, and a seal here. Imagine movies, right? Where a king writes a letter, or a duke or something writes a letter, and he puts it in an envelope, and he melts wax, puts it there, and puts his imprint on it, right? That's a seal. And so if someone receives the letter, why do they do this, right? If someone receives the letter and the seal has been broken, they can know that it's been tampered with in some way, right? It's a very old form of security measure. Also, the seal itself might have an insignia that would be hard to replicate. And so you can see, based on the fact that it is sealed, it has not been tampered with, and it's the seal of such and such ruler. And so therefore, you know it's not been tampered with and who it comes from. That's the same basic idea. There's some sort of seal. It doesn't say if it was wax. It could be rope. Who knows? A scroll could be sealed this way. If you had a book, you could have a clasp, right? That ties it together. All right? Yeah, that was completely wrong. Anyway, and so forth. That is a way that you could seal the thing. If it is a progressive sealing, it's not going to look like this. Because this, you've got to have all of the seals broken before you open it up. And so, it would look something more like this. If it's a progressive sealing, this first seal would be around the entire book, perhaps. Then this next one would start here, and here, and then here, and so forth. So once you broke this seal, you could read the first few pages. And the next seal, you could read the next few pages. And it would work the same way over here, where you would have, like, the first seal, you could just do right here, and the second seal a little bit further in, and so forth. And you could keep from unrolling it by having some sort of seal. How it actually works, I don't know if it's too significant, but think about in your mind, there's some sealing, and this is what they mean by sealed. They're talking about some sort of physical thing to keep it closed and untampered with. Now, this book comes out and it's sealed, okay? Which leads us to our next question. Why is John so sad? Okay? I have all sorts of books that I own that if I could not open them, I would actually be really sad. There are some books that I have that if I couldn't open, I'd be like, well, that's unfortunate. Whatever. Why is John so sad? Okay? Open-ended question. Why is John so sad? All right. He obviously thinks it's an important book. So the question would be, why is he so sad, and how would we figure that out, even if we're supposed to? Is he just so emotionally charged because he's in the middle of a vision? I would be. I'd be You're going to be, if you're experiencing something like John's experiencing right now, you are just going to be all sorts of frazzled in your brain and your soul. Is that why? Or is it he knows what's in that book? Maybe we don't, but he knows what's in that book. And he's like, nobody can open it. It needs to be opened. Okay? Let's come back to that. This one, I want you to try to answer before we discuss things. Why can Jesus open the book? Like I said before, because Jesus is God is not an acceptable answer. Okay? Why can Jesus open the book? And what does that tell us about the contents? Okay? So go back. Let's go back and let's read a little bit. What's that? Is that? Why can he open it? And what is that? Does that say anything about the contents? Yes, Chip.
A couple of things.
All right.
I just went ahead in chapter 6.
That's cheating. It's okay.
It looks like when he opens the seal, he doesn't open the scroll, that these visions appear as the seals are broken. And at the end of the chapter, verse 12, it says he wants to open the sixth seal. I don't see where he broke the seventh seal.
Seven seals later.
That's later. But I see these visions of the horse appearing just by breaking the seal.
And so that's a question. Is the breaking of the seal, does that cause the thing? Or is it they break the seal, what's the first page say? Or unroll a little bit of the scroll, what does it say? I see a rider on a black horse. All right. The default for me was always the seal meant the thing happened. All right? Breaking of the seal meant the thing happened, because it seems to, you can read it that way. But my question is, should we read it that way? But what's the purpose of breaking a seal on a book?
To read the next page.
Right? What's the purpose of breaking a seal on a letter? Right? When you break a seal on a letter from a king, what happens? Nothing.
You get to read it,
right? That's.
But you've only got one seal there.
But you've only got one, right. Right. And so you have a complicated scroll that's sealed in seven different ways, all right? Or a book. Might be a little bit easier to do.
Across the initial four.
So is it the seal? That's a part of the question. Is the seal the thing, the breaking of the seal, causing it? Or are you breaking the seal?
Revealing.
We're revealing it and we read it. All right?
But it seems like that's the point. This, like, is there an actual scroll? Or is this, this whole thing is full of visions and things that have happened. The point is what's revealed.
Mm-hmm.
Not whether he actually read it or saw it. It's what the contents of it was.
Yes. The contents are the most important. But let's... Let's still try to envision, right? They're using images for a reason, right? Because they're trying to communicate to the audience. And so you're right. The contents are obviously the most important.
I think all through Holy Scripture, though, we see this idea that there is another realm, another dimension, or whatever, called heaven. And what happens there has ramifications here.
Mm-hmm.
In our space.
Yeah.
The person between heaven and earth.
Jesus can go back and forth.
So he's the one that can open it, because he...
Okay, so the question of why can Jesus open it? That's what you're trying to answer.
He's gone from heaven to earth and back.
Okay.
And I don't know anybody else, Enoch or somebody, but
why couldn't angels open it?
They are at the root of David.
Okay, but they've gone to, there are many angels that have gone to earth and taken physical form and then left that physical form and become invisible again.
But their blood wasn't shed.
Okay, they're not descended of David, not blood shed. All right, so that's something distinct. Yes?
Doesn't verse 9 answer your question number 3?
I think possibly, all right? So let's read 9, all right? Why can Jesus open it? Worthy are you to take the scroll to open its seals. Well, that seems like an explanation, right? Why? For you were slain. Okay, well, that's true of Isaiah. Isaiah was slain, reportedly sawn in half and killed that way. All right, pretty bad, gruesome death. Isaiah was slain, but Isaiah can't open this. All right, and by your blood you ransomed people for God. Okay, biblically speaking, how many other beings have ransomed people for God? Okay, he is the Lamb. That seems to be the idea. From every tribe and language and people and nation, and verse 10, you have made them a kingdom and priests to our God, and they shall reign on the earth. All right. So what has this individual done that we can claim that no one else has done?
By his blood he's ransomed.
Ransomed for God's kingdom. And made a kingdom. Right. It's two things. It's not just ransoming. It's kingdomness. And this goes back to verse 5, right? And one of the elders said to me, "Weep no more. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has conquered so that he can open the scroll and its seven seals." So it's not just death, though that's clearly a part of it, right? Because it specifically says he can open it because he's worthy. It's also the nature of his Davidic rule, right? Of who he is as a descendant of David, all right? Not who he is as God, all right? But as the Davidic ruler and the Davidic ruler, the king and the conqueror. He's not just a king in name, right? He's actually a king in power, right? Conquered, all right? That's what he has done, and the ransomer, all right? So it says, why can Jesus open it? We have a specific reason. It's what he's actually done, all right, in time, all right, in human history. He showed up, and he conquered, and he gave his life. Yes, Jennifer?
You said something about, what does that tell us about the meaning of the scrolls or the meaning of the seals, like what's going to happen because of them? And does that go back to the first letters to the churches about how he's going to come sometimes in judgment to these churches that are apostate. And so now we have judgment coming with the scroll, with the seals.
Quite possibly. So let's think about this. Just generically speaking, all right? Anyone can open any book, which means that if only a certain person or a certain group of people can open a certain book, that means something special either about them or about the contents. And it could be in both. Like in this case, why would you not let anyone open this book other than the Davidic king who's given his life for the people? Probably because of who he is, and there's something special about this book. All right, something that can only happen and only be known about because he has done his work. So in other words, let's make, this is the assumption I have in my head. If we stick with the image, the book has always existed. All right. Jesus has always existed. But, all right, but there was a specific point in human history where he became a human and did a thing. All right. He became a human, did his ministry, died for his people, established a kingdom. And at that point, and only at that point, was it time in history for the Davidic king who has given his life to open the book. It's been around, but now it's time. Open it. Okay? He got a security clearance. And also, in terms of, if we think to the sadness, the potential sadness of John, all right? What if John knows what's in this book? All right? What if John, let's just say, this is the book, all right, that is going to, when this thing is opened, the new covenant is fully inaugurated, all right, and the future is now starting, all right. Let's just say that it's something big like that, all right. If John sees the book and then no one can open it, he should be sad, right? Because John's expectation probably is Jesus is the Messiah, right? He is the prophet par excellence, all right? We're expecting this big thing to happen. Here's this book. We can finally open the book. Wait a minute. What do you mean we can't open the book? And so he starts weeping because maybe he's in persecution, right? He is currently on the Isle of Patmos being exiled, all right? He's going through all of these things. And it's time. What do you mean it's not time? How can it not be time? And so he starts weeping, right? For us, because we've read this multiple times, we can glaze over this whole weeping thing. But think of it, all right? This is here. John is having a very emotional moment here. Why would this be mentioned? Because I would assume because John is really emotional here. And it's maybe not just the fact that it's an exciting time for him because he's in the vision, but basically because he's like, yes, yes, it's about to happen. Wait a minute, no one can open the book. And so he starts weeping. Okay? Yes?
You can see some of it. Even if he didn't know what was in it, like verse 1, he saw in the right hand of him who was seated on the throne, like he's in heaven, the right hand and scroll. It's important what's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he doesn't know what's in it, it's very important. Verse 2, a mighty angel proclaims in a loud voice, who can open it? The anticipation that it's going to be open. Someone's going to open it.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's not. Like the king on the throne has the scroll and no one can open it.
Yep.
But then one of those 24 elders says, calm down. We know who can open it.
Yeah. Right. And what's going on in John's head, right? He's in this vision so far, right? At least not in the vision so far. In the throne room in heaven, he does not see Jesus up until this point, right? There is God the Father sitting on the throne. There's the creatures. There's the elders. There is no Jesus. And so God the Father is holding the scroll, all right? What's John's question? Why would he not assume Jesus would be around there somewhere? I don't know. But for whatever reason, he sees it. He sees it and no one can open it. And so he weeps. He just weeps. But an elder says, well, wait a minute. It's okay, right? So even if John, and I think you're right, even if John doesn't know what the contents are, it is being held by God, right? So therefore, it is extremely important. And so maybe that's enough just to make him go, this is terrible that no one can open this book.
Well, and then this is written after he's been a disciple and gospel preacher and apostle for many years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for him, I don't think it's in question whether or not Jesus' kingdom is inaugurated, or unless this is kind of stepping back before he knew that for sure. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
like the apostles didn't. They're often confused while Jesus is with them, right? But
right.
After they see him in the resurrection,
they see things more clearly.
Like, okay, we got it now. And
right.
They spread the gospel everywhere.
Right.
And John, you know, writes lots of things that we're still using. So how does that interact with this?
That's a fantastic question. And that points to overall worldview. All right. So let's say you're a premillennialist. Okay. Premillennialists believe the kingdom from our current perspective is in the future. It has not started yet. And so for them, when does the kingdom really, really start? Well, especially if you're a dispensationalist, it doesn't really start until the future. All right. Lots of premillennialists will say Jesus is currently king, right? This is actually fairly normal in premillennialism, and there is currently a kingdom. Dispensationalists would say, no, the kingdom of God has not come at all. It won't come until the future. Okay?
Boo.
Boo. Yeah, thank you. And so the kingdom. Right. And so depending on your brand of premillennialism, all right, you're either waiting for a future kingdom at all, right? David is or is not ruling on the throne. Or you're looking for a future millennium, which is a little bit different than the kingdom. So that affects your reading in terms of what does John think about the coming of the kingdom. Now, if you're an amillennialist, which you might say, as we tend to be, is, okay, the kingdom start, when did the kingdom start? Well, when Jesus was resurrected. Or during his lifetime. Either it was starting then, right, where the kingdom of heaven is near, and then he's resurrected and the kingdom starts. So when did it happen?
When he cast out demons, he said, I, with the finger of God, cast out demons. Surely the kingdom has come upon you.
Mm-hmm. So it's maybe it's right then, right? Or, all right, and this is how I read it, all right? Did the kingdom come when Jesus was here? And I believe yes, all right? But for them, and this is part of my preterist reading of the book, okay? Don't think of it as a, it happened. Think of it as a, it has to happen. As in, yes, it starts when Jesus comes. It's not, the old is not fully passed away, and the new is not fully come, fully, until the old covenant is ultimately removed. All right? In terms of its effectiveness, it was removed, all right, when Jesus came. In terms of when did God really put an end to it? There was a more clear end put to it in AD 70, because that is when God destroyed the temple, all right? And the priestly caste that was able to continue to do their thing, they just couldn't even do it anymore. God definitively brought it to an end. And so if you are a preterist like myself who believes that many of these things are in the future from John's perspective, but past from ours, I'm going to look at this and go, is the kingdom inaugurated? Yes. No. Right? It absolutely has, but there's something that is waiting, right? John's waiting for something else. Or Paul, right? When he's looking in a lot of his letters, he's looking for something really soon. Something huge and something really soon to happen. Already not yet. Or in the Olivet Discourse. Why is it called the Olivet Discourse?
On Mount of Olives.
It was given on the Mount of Olives. Thank you. All right, this is something that's in the Gospels where Jesus is talking about something in the future that will happen in their generation. It's huge. It's big. It's destruction of Jerusalem. Right? We want to focus on the Jesus did it. All right. I think there's this part of the New Testament which is Jesus did it, and there's still a few things that's just about to happen. All right. Any day now, it's going to happen. We're waiting for these things, and part of those are in the letters. Like what you mentioned, all right? We're waiting for those to happen. So for John, I'm ready for these things to happen. Ready. Wait, why can't these things happen? We can't open the scroll. And then Jesus shows up. And now the scroll can be opened. Massive relief. Okay?
Dad,
yes, sir?
So you said Jesus wasn't there whenever John first saw the scroll being opened by God?
Yes.
Do you think maybe Jesus wasn't there because God wanted to use that as, not necessarily as suspense, but to show us how important the scroll is by making John not see it first off so that he gets really sad and then it's written down and then
I think we realize
how important it is?
Yeah, it's an important part of the book of Revelation. All right, who is the centerpiece? Who's in the center of the book of Revelation? All right, Jesus is in the center of the book of Revelation and the church. All right, of him coming and doing his thing and making.
He might be there, but he's not seen.
Right, he could be hiding.
The elder says that, and then he stands up. He said, "It says he stood in the midst of the throne and of the elders."
Maybe he's not John's emotion too. Is that he's realizing in his mind, in his paradigm, he was hoping this was going to happen right now. Like he was going to get to see the kingdom the way that he envisioned it, and now he's realizing. It's not what I thought. It's going to happen, and I know who Jesus is, but not now. It's not going to happen now. And so, I'm not going to get to see it.
That's right. He has that sense of disappointment. Until, wait a minute. We actually do get to open the scroll, right? Because there is the relief, right? It is telling a story to create a sense of loss of, I can't open the scroll. But then, who's now standing in the midst? All right? The lion of the tribe of Judah, or really the lamb, right? As it says here, the lamb who appeared or as though it had been slain in verse 6, right? And it describes them. Seven horns, which is, power. The seven eyes, which is the seven spirits of God. We've talked about that before. Maybe we'll come back to it next time. And he went and took the scroll from the right hand of him who was seated on the throne. All right? And when he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures and 24 elders fell down before the Lamb. Now, the answer of Jesus is God, so therefore he can open it, right, is the wrong answer. Right? As we've said, it actually specifies two times. Why can Jesus do it? Davidic descendant, king reigning, has conquered, given his life. That's why he can specifically do it. Okay. But that being said, what does this say about Jesus? Right? Imagine you, or I'll tell you what, you can't imagine the scene where everybody, all in this room, turn and bow down to John. That won't make any sense. It wouldn't make sense for any of the people in that room to all turn around and bow down to one of the elders or to one of the four living creatures around the throne. None of that makes sense. We look at all of that and go, that's wrong, right? Only God should be worshipped. But in this scene, everyone in the scene, all right, all the elders, not the Father who's sitting on the throne, but all the elders, all the living creatures, they bow down to Jesus. And so in terms of who this thing is, right, he is Davidic descendant. All right, that's very clear here. He is the sacrificial lamb, very clear here. But in terms of the heavenly scene, all right, he is worshipped by literally everyone. All right, and that is inappropriate for anybody other than God. We've seen this before. He is the one who was and is to come. Here's another piece of Revelation, and this is all through Revelation. It's another piece that says, who is this being? This being is receiving the full worship that only is appropriate for God. Therefore, it's really clear. He is God. It's not well defined here. There is no clear doctrine of the Trinity that's the metaphysics of which are very, distinguished and defined. It's not that, but it is clear. God the Father is worshipped. God the Son is clearly worshipped in the same way. Okay, so we are out of time. What is in this book? All right? Think about that. Think about what is in this book. All right? Because we're opening the seals, and then theoretically we're reading things from the book. Or the things are happening when you open the seals, depending on how you view the thing. All right? What is in this book? A good question for as we continue on in the book. How is it sealed? Think about it. Is it a progressive opening of the book, page by page? Why can Jesus open it? I think we answered that. Right? I think the text is pretty clear there. Why is John sad? I think there's multiple reasons, and depending on how you view the covenants and all that, you might answer it differently. All right? And, we discussed that. So, next time, all right, we're going to go back through a few things in this chapter I want to discuss, and then we will jump into chapter 6. Any items of discussion or questions before we dismiss? Yes?
John could have said that I saw in his hand that a devil sat on the throne. He specifically said he saw it in his writing.
Right.
He said it again later on when Jesus takes the scroll from the right hand of the person on the throne. What's his commitment of being in the right hand?
Right hand is always more important.
Is it this the hand you take an oath with?
Okay.
It indicates power, doesn't it, usually?
Especially when you're reading this book, you kind of catch sort of a little bit of details. Do you know what the significance is? If there's any at all.
Now, would they have taken an oath with the right hand, or is that just us?
I don't know how that tradition started. It may have started with this.
It could have. But at the very least, right, there is a very clear difference between sitting on the right hand of someone versus sitting on the left hand of someone, right? Yeah. Right hand, left hand, right? Okay, so there's a big difference between those two things. And for it to be in the right hand and specified in the right hand, okay, that seems significant, right?
It would appear to be.
Especially if it's mentioned twice. Yeah. Any other thoughts, questions? Okay. So think about what's in the contents of this book. Think about the question about the seals. All right. Read ahead and see. Try to imagine in your brain the different ways that this could play out, and go, what's, you know, the book is painting a vivid picture. It really is trying to do that. And if it's trying to paint a vivid picture, let's try to figure out what that picture is. Maybe it'll help us read it and understand it. Maybe it won't. Maybe it's just details and interesting adjectives and whatnot. But maybe it really will help us read it. So think through it. What's the nature of the sealing? What's the nature of the book? What's the nature of this revelation as it is progressively unrolled, unsealed? Or is it just all unsealed? Now let's just do the first page. Now let's do the second page and so on. Think about it. We'll discuss it more. All right, let's dismiss. Grady, will you pray first, please?